everyone, and welcome to Minute 3 of the Movie Rob Minute, the daily podcast where we take a wild trip through the 1987 John Hughes comedy Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, one minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again on this lovely Wednesday is Jake Cluett of the Deep Blue Sea podcast and Life vs. Film. Welcome back to the show, Jake.
Thank you, Rob. Thanks for having me again.
Yeah, well, yeah, you know, things went well the last 2 days, so I figured I'll have you for another day. We'll see what we'll do about the other 2 days this week, whether whether it'll be worthy of having you back. But I'm assuming that we'll be able to figure that one out. All right. Well, minute 3 begins with John waiting for an answer, and ends with Neil looking out at traffic. As we discussed yesterday, Neil and John are in a board meeting where the big boss Bryant is looking at some sort of ad, cosmetic ad, and trying to make a decision, and is having a lot of trouble making that decision. So we ended yesterday's minute with him about to open his mouth and make a decision, and then he closes his mouth. And then we see John, Ferris Bueller's pseudo-dad, or uncle, as we've established, his uncle, maybe it's his uncle. He actually is, this minute starts with him still looking at Bryant, waiting for an answer with his mouth open. And he doesn't seem to get one. And that's pretty much the end of that scene.
Yeah. There is no answer from this meeting. Like the outcome of the meeting is we'll see what it's like after the holidays.
Yes, pretty much.
Which, as somebody who doesn't celebrate Thanksgiving, has never considered it a holiday in this country. When he says after the holidays, do you think he means after Thanksgiving or after Thanksgiving and Christmas?
Well, that's a
holidays.
That's a very good question, and I don't have an answer for you, because on the one hand, you would think that, okay, normally if they're saying after the holiday, so we'll do it after Thanksgiving, but these guys are flying in from Chicago for this meeting.
And he says holidays. He definitely has the plural, and just Thanksgiving isn't a plural holiday. It's a singular.
Right. He says reconvene after the holidays. You're right. So yeah. No, but that's probably what they mean. They probably say, okay, let's wait until after January. But that's a long time to be sitting
that's waiting a long time.
For an answer. That's a really long time.
Especially in a world without internet and email and instant communication.
Yeah, I mean, this is something
they're less used to things being as immediate, perhaps.
Yes.
As we are today.
So. Yeah, that's true. I mean, a lot of movies from this time, including this movie, we'll probably discuss it quite often throughout this entire show about the fact that if someone had a cell phone, things would be so much easier.
Yes.
You wouldn't have all of these problems.
Yeah, that's why the remake that you mentioned earlier this week, well, the proposed remake, they're going to have to do some legwork to get around we'll just make a phone call.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I once saw, you can probably find this on the internet somewhere, someone did what if the TV show 24 took place before there were cell phones, and you have like Jack Bauer trying to figure out trying to dial with a rotary phone and things like that. So, you know, if anyone I'll try to remember to put the link in for that. That's a very funny little spoof about it.
I mean, what happens in 24 if it's before they have air travel or even car travel? Because much of that show is getting from one place to the other as quickly as possible.
That's true. No, but the idea is we're not talking about putting it back in the 60s. We're putting it, you know, just a few years earlier, and you'd have
a
problem. You know, as we know, many movies from the 60s, 70s, 80s, and beforehand, things would be solved much quicker if someone had a cell phone or the internet. Or things like that. So
I'm just intrigued by if we had an episode of 20 or a season of 24, but set in like the Old West, kind of. If that's when 24 took place, how that would happen?
Well, it depends if you have Doc Brown there.
Indeed, it does. Yes.
You know, that's one of the reasons why I liked what was it called, the 8 Million Ways to Die in the West, or something like that.
Something like that.
Something
you
like that
film?
What? No, I didn't like it at all. But I loved the cameo. Right. I love the cameo of Doc Brown. That was the thing that got me that I loved.
Yeah, one of the few bright spots of that.
I think it was pretty much the only one for me. But the problem was that the trailer ruined it. So you knew that it was there. You knew it was coming.
Yeah,
that would have been a very nice surprise. Yes. Which is one of the reasons why I rarely watch trailers these days. I usually watch the trailer. I watch trailers either months and months and months before the movie comes out, So this way I'll probably forget most of it. Or I watch it after I watch the movie, and then I'm like, wow, I'm so glad I didn't watch this trailer before I watched the movie.
So I haven't recently watched the trailer for Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. Do you know if the cameo that we get in tomorrow's minute, if that's shown in the trailer or not?
I have absolutely no
I'd
idea.
hope that it's.
I haven't looked at the trailer either. Well, I probably
I would
should.
hope that it
Maybe
isn't.
I'll take a look at it before tomorrow's episode. We'll take a look.
Maybe. Okay.
We'll get back to that tomorrow. Now, I will give you an answer tomorrow before we get that cameo. We'll be able to see if he's
Okay.
actually there. There you go. So basically, as we were saying, they're waiting for this response. They don't get a response, and then the scene cuts, and we see the two of them standing in the hallway of this office building where there's nobody else in the hallway. It's completely empty. And we see that Steve Martin's character, Neil, is wearing a jacket. He's got his hat, and he's carrying two bags, both in the same hand. And he basically says, 2 solid hours of staring at the material to decide to reconvene after the holidays for a fresh look at the layout. They're selling cosmetics, not curing cancer. And then he looks over at John. And he goes, "Hey, why aren't you going to the airport?" And I love how he waves his. Do you notice
This
he's waving his hat as he's talking?
is waving his hat, and I like the hat
Yeah.
waving, but other than that, I don't think Steve Martin is very good in this minute.
He's pretty
Because
much a
I
bananas,
think,
you know.
well, yeah, but the way he's or and what the way he delivers the bit that we haven't got to yet of the oh, I forgot my
Right.
gloves, they're O'Brien's off. The way he delivered that is very, it's very acting and not very believable. I feel like he's putting on a show rather than he'd already realized he hadn't got his gloves, but he's like pretending he's forgotten them because he wants to appear like he's annoyed, so John will go and pick him up. And
Right.
it doesn't. I don't believe the anguish, and even the delivery of the 2 solid hours of staring at the material to decide to reconvene after holidays for a fresh look at the layout is John Hughes, fantastic writer, but that's a clumsy sentence of exposition to somebody who knows all of that information. John was in that meeting as well. They would have just had that conversation in the
But it's to
meeting.
tell us, it's for him to
And
complain.
I get it, it's to tell us, but it sounds clumsy. No one would actually
Right.
say it in that way minutes after they and the person they're speaking to have just heard that
Sure.
exact
The
same thing.
bigger question that I ask is that did they fly in just for this 2 hour meeting, or has it been
Quite
an
possibly.
extracted number of days that they're there? You know, did he just get in that morning? Did he get in yesterday, last night? You know, and then he came in for this 2 hour meeting. I mean, these are questions that we'll never get an answer for, obviously, because it's not mentioned anywhere. Because no one really cares how they got there. It's what's going to happen when they leave.
Or even, well, potentially, I know that they've just been in a meeting with a client, but is it possible that they work regularly in this building?
It is possible.
Like, and he would commute from Chicago to New York like once a week, perhaps, or
My assumption
regularly?
is it doesn't. He doesn't because of a lot of things that are said, especially in the main script when they're dealing with the whole fight between him and his wife, which is obviously, you know, cut out of it's cut out of the final version. But it doesn't make it
I
seem
see.
as if he's always traveling. It means it's showing that this is, you know, one of her complaints is the fact that why are you traveling Thanksgiving, right before Thanksgiving? There's no reason to do so. And it's not that you're never home or anything like that.
Yeah.
So I
Okay.
don't know.
And we get the first mention of his
That's
wife
right.
here,
Right.
of his partner,
Right. Well,
Susan.
first John goes,
Yeah.
well, when he asks John why isn't he going to the airport, which it's funny because you see the way the two of them are dressed. Now, why would John not have his overcoat with him anyway? Because they must be staying in a hotel somewhere. They're not staying in the GM building. So he would have to brought his stuff
No.
anyway, unless it's somewhere in a closet. So he should have asked the question earlier when Steve Martin took his jacket and his bags from wherever it was being held, maybe at the secretary station or something like that. At that point, he should have said to John, "Where's your stuff?"
Well, I mean, well, yes, but also, where are Steve Martin's gloves? They're in Brian's office. Why are his gloves in Brian's office? Maybe his coat and his hat were there as well. Like, maybe Brian is like one of the guys they come to meet. So they went to Brian's office, they dumped their coats and their gloves and their bags there. And when he picked up his coat and his hat, he forgot to get his gloves. So maybe all of John's gear is in Brian's
That's
office as well.
actually very interesting.
is the narrative I'm gonna
I
posit.
actually like that idea. But what's interesting is they say Brian's office, according to the captions, it's Brian's office. But William Wyndham is credited as Bryant with a T at the end. So it's not Brian. In
It could
IMDb,
be a different character.
And according to IMDb, obviously. You know, it is. No, I like what that's why I like what you're saying, because what you're basically saying is that there's two different people. Brian is their connection there, their contact, and he basically left his stuff. They left their stuff in Brian's office, and then they went from Brian's office to
They
Brian's.
Got to the meeting an hour, like half an hour early. They know Brian. They stopped by, had a chat with him, put their stuff there,
and then he had to rush to take it. But the conversation that he's having with John about where's John's stuff should have happened a few seconds or minutes earlier. When they went into Brian's office, or Brian's office, it doesn't matter where it is, and he should have had it. He should have said to him back then, "Hey, why aren't you grabbing your stuff?" And then he would have said, "Oh, I'm not going now. You know, I'm going to wait."
I can only theorize that post meeting, maybe when Neil went to go and get his stuff, John popped to the bathroom. They've been in this meeting for 2 hours. He needs to go and. Go and wash his face or something. So they haven't been entirely together since the meeting, and they met up on the way to the elevator. So maybe they weren't
That's
together.
That's very possible. Maybe they filmed that and cut that out also. You never know. We'll later talk about what's in the script, but it's not in the script.
It's not essential
at all, but it's fun. It's fun to discuss it.
It's in the 4-hour
cut. No, that's the thing. It's not written. It's not in the script. So that's in the 5-hour cut, where they add in those little extra minutes of them walking. Of John going to the bathroom. And so John basically responds to him, "Well, what's the point of busting my ass to catch the 6 o'clock flight?" He says, "Why don't you wait and go out with me on the 8? And completely
sensible
idea. And then his response is, and then he keeps saying to him, "You're never going to get a cab at this hour." Now, that is a great line, but doesn't make any sense if you read the script, which we'll talk about later. Because there's an inconsistency there with the original script. So I think that they must have changed that line. They must have ADR'd it or something like that for him to say that little line. And then Neil's response is, "Well, I told Susan I'd be home by 9. So what's really interesting there is, according to the calculations that we made yesterday when we saw the plane ticket, it would take him an hour and 45 minutes to fly. Okay, so theoretically he gets back to Chicago at 6:45, and then it takes him 2 hours and a quarter to get home. So the flight is shorter than his trip from O'Hare to his to his house.
By 9, arriving home at 7:30 is still before 9. So maybe she said it'd be great if you'd be home before 9, and then he realized if he got the 8 o'clock flight, he wouldn't be able to get home in 15 minutes from landing at 8:45.
Okay. That's true.
So, but I like the headcanon of, yes, he said to Susan he'd be home before 9, but also he's had enough of John. He's spent too much time with him already. He just wants to get away from this guy. He'd rather try and catch a cab at rush
I'm sure,
hour
I'm sure
in
that's
New York
happened to you also.
Than spend another minute with this guy
I'm
in his
sure
eyebrows.
It's happened to you also. It happens to everybody. You know, we're
I think I'd be on both sides of that.
People didn't want to be with you anymore. Okay, that could be too.
Could be.
So, and then you hear the elevator door bing. Now, then he goes, "That's you." Now, if everyone remembers, when we checked yesterday, we were talking about how many elevators there are in the GM building. Do you remember the number that we talked about the other day?
It was a lot. It was like something like 50, I think
35.
It was 30 or 50, somewhere in that
there
room.
There were 35.
35, okay. Yeah. I remember the 3 and the 5. But
it looked like there's – I couldn't tell if there were other elevators around there. It looked like there's just one, which goes to show that in their set that they created here, they must not have really – obviously, they didn't film in the GM building. But
there's at least two, because there's one – the one that he gets in, there is one next to it, the other side of the buttons that's in front of us. There's at least two in this
right, lobby. Okay. Well, 2 out of 35. You'd think that there'd be a lot more.
Actually, but I think and there are some on the opposite wall as they walk into that lobby area. So there's 4 in this room.
Okay. Right. Okay, I see what you're talking about. Yeah, there's 4. Okay. So,
Yeah, but it's a pretty big building, so they're not going to have them all in a line in one area. They're going to be spaced out
for sure.
around the place. But I like that they're cementing that Neil, not a great guy, by the way, he just backs blindly into the elevator, expecting the full elevator of people to just get out of
Well, he
his
doesn't know
way
how
without
many
any
people are in the
acknowledgement from
elevator.
him. It's five.
No, but
It's a full
he
elevator.
doesn't know that before he gets in. That's what I'm saying.
That's true. He doesn't even think to check. It's not even like he just assumes that there'll be space. Anyone who's in there will get out of the
Correct.
way. What a horrible person.
But like he says that's you, and then he starts flipping his hat again. He starts talking about his hat, you know. He goes,
Yeah.
and because this is the point where he realizes that he forgot his gloves. He goes, ah, damn it. I left my gloves in Brian's office, which again, we're not sure if it's really Bryant or Brian. Brian or Bryant, doesn't matter. And then he basically gives himself an excuse. Says, ah, I don't need them. I get in the elevator. I get in the taxi. I get on the plane. Then I'm home. Would you pick them up for me?
This is insane logic. I hate that this is
He goes,
ridiculous. He knows it's going to be hard to catch a cab. Even like it gets very cold in New
yes,
York.
especially this is the end of November. I mean, it's cold there. It's not December weather yet, but it's still pretty cold. And then he goes, oh, I'll drive over tomorrow and get them for you. So the answer is great.
It's just
Have a
it.
good holiday. He says have a good holiday. Doesn't even say have a great holiday. You know, enjoy your turkey. Have
Good.
a good holiday.
Have a
And
satisfactory holiday.
then he goes, oh, I'll see you in Chicago. And then, like you said, he's backing into the elevator. We have five people, and like one of the women just moves away. She's like, everyone's looking at him. Who's this guy that's just.
The woman directly behind him has a real nice eye
Yeah.
roll. Like, oh, this guy, he does this every day. He never looks around when he gets into the elevator.
Yeah. And then John basically looks at him as he gets in, and then he says,
You'll never make the
I love
six.
that. I think that the 3D, I mean, if you're watching this in 3D, to have, you know.
Out of here. Those eyebrows are all over the place. They're bouncing up and down. It's great.
Completely. So that's great. And then we get to see a whole line of people waiting for a cab in this rush hour traffic.
Yeah, this is how you can tell it's not in England. Because in England, there would be an orderly queue. He wouldn't be like in the middle of this line of people. There would be a line of people, and the person at the front would get the next taxi, and then behind them with the next one, then behind them. He's like got 20 people behind him and a dozen in front of him. And no, you join a queue, and the person at the front gets the taxi, and you keep going back from there.
I mean, I counted 13 people in standing in line there. And
Yes, there's a
what
lot,
I
yeah.
loved is how he just like pops out of line. You see him, you look at the line and you don't see him standing in line. You're thinking to yourself, okay, he's gonna come down and he's gonna see this long line. But he's already standing in the line. And then he pops out as like number three or number four. So again, time is moving very slowly for him because he's got less than an hour to catch this plane. And
Yeah.
he's standing relatively calmly, waiting for this taxi to come by. You know, and he has this look of exasperation on his face.
Understandable. Maybe he's stood still because he could. If you're rushing around trying to see a cab, you might like to miss it than if you're standing still. I guess he's looking around for that light on top of the cab. But so is everyone else. He doesn't have a hope in hell. This is, yeah,
No,
no
none
chance.
whatsoever. And then he looks down and we can see the traffic, and we see a lot of traffic. I mean, one of the things about New York that I always will recall from driving there, from walking around, it doesn't matter, that almost every street is a one-way street. So.
I've never driven around it, so I've never picked up on that. But I have walked around there a lot, and I can confirm that New York gets quite busy.
Yes. Especially 2 days before Thanksgiving, when at 5 o'clock in the afternoon. I mean, this is definitely the time that everyone's getting ready to go home from work. So
Yes,
that
I mean
sort of makes
I've been
sense.
there at Christmas. We went for Christmas 1 year. This isn't my travel story,
Oh, okay.
but we went there for Christmas 1 year, and I was surprised by how like halfway through Christmas Day, everything just opened up again. Like the New York was basically open on Christmas. Like all the shops, all the obviously the restaurants are, but like every business place just seemed to open again after lunch, which I was very surprised by.
Well,
It's not
they
what
want to
I'm
make
familiar
money.
with at all.
This is the
I
time to
understand,
make
yeah.
money. You can't just close
I get
up
it.
completely.
But like in England, the cinemas are even shut on Christmas, which I
Really?
understand in America. Yeah,
Really?
because in this country, most people, as far as I'm aware, are Christian or celebrate Christmas, whereas in other countries, you have people of other religions who don't celebrate Christmas.
Right. I mean, I remember growing up every Christmas as a Jew, we would go out to the movies. I saw Clue on Christmas. I saw DOA. I can, if I think about it, I can remember all the different
I
movies.
saw a great film. I
Then
saw a terrible film.
I like DOA, but you don't like DOA because it's Dennis Quaid. Come on.
Was thinking of a different. I was thinking of a different DOA. There's the video game adaptation
No,
with
no.
like Holly Valance.
No, I don't think that's the same one. Not even close. But it was a Dennis Quaid movie, so with Dennis Quaid and Meg Ryan.
I always hear people's stories about like going to see the new Christmas release, and that does sound wonderful. But even if cinemas were open here, my family would not go on Christmas. It
Right, okay. No,
wouldn't be the
that's
go thing.
understandable. I mean,
It's a shame.
on Jewish
It's
holidays,
not.
I won't go either.
But
That's the way it works.
I'd like to, damn
Exactly. So then we get to then basically we see that Neil is not going to wait around in this line. He's going to be smarter than everyone else, and he's going to find a cab on his own instead of waiting in this orderly line of 13 people to get one. So he starts walking. And so one of the things that we're going to talk about for the next few days, I like looking around to try and figure out where he is. Is he really right outside the GM building? So I was looking at different landmarks that we see throughout the movie. And so the first landmark that we see is there's this Roy Rogers chicken and burger, a fast food restaurant right behind him. Okay, so I did a little bit of research to figure out where it is. There is one on 34th Street, right near Park Avenue, but that's not really where he was. It's not that far, but it's also not that close. It's not something that he would be there right away. He got there pretty quickly. Now, have you ever heard of Roy Rogers? Not
No,
the
well, I've
actor,
heard of,
not the actor, or
I've heard of the person, but
right, not the
not the
person.
chain. No.
So it was a chain that, well, right now they have 33, about 43 current locations that are still open. It's a restaurant that has hamburgers, roast beef, and fried chicken mostly on their menu.
Okay.
Most of them are around the Eastern Seaboard. So most of their branches are in Maryland. You have 23 in Maryland, seven in Virginia, one in West Virginia, three in New Jersey, eight in Pennsylvania, and there's only one left in New York, and it's not even this one. This one that we see here was closed down. At one point, they actually had over 600 locations,
Wow.
and in 1990, it was bought up by Hardee's. So they converted most of their restaurants to Hardee's restaurants, but that didn't really work very well either. So I could give a little more information about it, but I think that's enough. We don't need that much. But the bottom line is this is not on the corner across from where he just came out of the building. And that's what I'm trying
No, yeah.
to show here. You'd think, I mean, I'm sure anyone listening who is from New York, who knows Manhattan, will notice even more than I do that things are jumping on a little bit in Midtown Manhattan. Most of the places that we're going to talk about in the next few days are in Midtown Manhattan, and they might be a few blocks away from one another, but we'll discuss about the fact how it's impossible that he's really walking in those places. So basically, then he looks around. And as I mentioned, you can see that every street that he's next to has a one-way one-way sign showing how, what I mentioned earlier, that most of the streets in Manhattan are one-way streets. And he looks around, he's trying to find where there's a cab, and he's looking around, and then he looks down towards the next block, and we can see the sign that it's Park Avenue over there. And we can see that there's a Citibank. So I went to look, okay, where's there a Citibank? And I couldn't find a Citibank on Park Avenue, which is very strange. It's possible
Okay.
that it has closed. It's a little difficult to try and find where there was a bank in 1986, 87 when they filmed this. So I
Well,
found it.
I there's a website on the set of newyork.com, which has the locations of where all these things are in Planes, Trains, and apparently it's on East 54th and East 55th Street,
Okay.
on Madison Avenue.
Okay, which is nowhere near where we just and there you go. It says Park Avenue. you see the sign saying Park Avenue, which doesn't make any sense then if you're saying it's on
But
Madison.
apparently this is also where the Roy, apparently this is also where the Roy Rogers is.
Right. Okay.
So is this is all, yeah.
Right.
According to this website.
Okay. But they're not where he just came out of the GM building. Because as we said the other day, the GM building, it was it's on,
yeah,
Fifth, it's on
it,
Fifth
it
Avenue.
Is, yeah, 767 Fifth Avenue.
Yeah. So, yeah. So, but they don't expect people to actually be doing this and trying to figure it out. They're like, you're in New York.
Why not?
It's busy New York. That's it. You know, you don't need anything beyond that. So there's, because I found that there's a Citibank near Penn Station. There's one in Koreatown. There's one in Midtown South. There's one in the Garment District. You know, he's close to the Empire State Building, Macy's. You know, Macy's everyone knows is on 34th Street because of that famous small little movie that isn't played very often, especially on Thanksgiving and Christmas. You know,
I mean, I've never seen
Miracle.
It. So. But I know what it is.
Right. So Miracle on 34th Street, for those who couldn't guess what we were talking about. So Neil starts looking out, and we see that he notices something, but we're not sure. And then he looks to the side.
But
and that's basically how
he sees a taxi, but the taxi has its light off. So I don't know what he's thinking.
Right.
Why we're showing
exactly.
that he's noticed that, because he can't see there's no one in it.
Exactly.
And then he hears a whistle.
And yes, there's a whistle. There's a car honking, you know, things like that, just to give us a little bit of an atmosphere of what it's like in the hustle and bustle of New York City.
Have you ever had to hail a taxi? Is that something you've ever
yes.
had to do? Okay, because I never
yes.
have.
Yes.
Is it?
I mean, I have a car, so I mostly don't use. But wait, you're saying in New York or in general?
Anywhere. I've never had
yeah,
to hail a taxi.
I've hailed taxis. Sure. I've hailed taxis. I mean, I have a car and I love my car. So as much as I can, I use my car. But when I do need to go places, even here in Israel, where I need a taxi, I mean, in the town that I live in, I'll never find a taxi. But if I'm in a big town, whether I'm in Jerusalem or Tel Aviv, something like that, if I need a taxi, yes, I would hail a taxi. And it's very frustrating when you're waiting and you think that the taxi is about to stop by you, and then you see that there's someone in the taxi or they just drive by. You know,
in the UK, you're encouraged to book a taxi, and there's like adverts, there's signs up saying an unbooked taxi is just a stranger's car, basically. So not to get in a taxi, not to hail a taxi, because you'll die if you do that. It's basically
and if you order an Uber, that can't happen.
I'm sorry.
If you order an Uber, that can't happen.
I've never done that either, so I don't know.
No, my point is
I walk and cycle wherever possible.
Right. Okay. That makes sense. Just want to mention a few things in the script. Do you have anything else you want to say about this minute before we move along?
Please move on. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. So in the original script, or in the shooting script, which as far as I know, these scenes were all filmed, just ended up on the cutting room floor. John basically says to him, after Neil says that they're selling cosmetics, not curing cancer. So John's response is, well, a lot of their cosmetics may well cause cancer.
Oh, Jesus.
They cut that out.
Yes, I can see that being a problem for most cosmetic companies.
Yes. And then Neil basically undoes his pants and then reaches his hand in. Yes. Here, it says Neil unzips his trousers, reaches his hand in the fly, and carefully straightens his shirt tails.
Okay, fine. I thought that
okay.
was like,
No. We're not going there. We're not going in that direction. Don't worry. But it's funny that they put that into the script. I mean, my impression of why that's in the script is to show how meticulous of a person he is. He's about to get onto this elevator, so he wants to straighten everything out. He's just sat for 2 hours in this meeting with Bryant and had enough of it, and his shirt somehow got pulled out a little bit, so he wanted to make himself more presentable to get into the elevator. Okay? So. Then, basically, a minor difference, John says that he is trying to catch a flight at 8:15 instead of at 8. It's a small little thing, but it does, later on when we talk about the fact that John probably did get home that evening, so it makes sense that he is on a even slightly later flight. Okay. At that
but
point,
interesting about the shirt tails, because when Neil gets in the elevator and when he's trying to get the cab, his tie is crooked.
But is his shirt?
his shirt looks a little rumpled at the bottom, but his if to say he's more concerned with his appearance, his tie is off to the side.
Yeah,
sloppy.
And they can see his tie, and they can't see his shirt or his pants.
Yeah.
So yeah, but I can understand why they would have dropped that anyway. Then their discussion is a little is changed a little bit. They change around a little bit of what they say. John then says, what difference does it make a couple of hours? So Neil says, under normal circumstances, none. But considering the state of affairs at my house these days, it makes all the difference. This goes back to the whole idea that they cut out this whole subplot of him having trouble at home. So then John says, the six is a pain in the ass. Call and tell Susan it was delayed. And his answer was, I can't make that one work anymore. Meaning he's been lying to her.
So, and that feels like something she could check as well.
Yes.
If it was a concern for her, she could call up the airline and say, oh, no, the sixth floor's running fine. Your husband is just having an affair.
Yes. Well, that's what she believes, apparently. In New York. He's flying to New York for 2 days before Thanksgiving in order to have this little affair.
Well, they do have then, women in New York, I hear.
Yes.
So
they do. So I've heard often, yeah. And they apparently have them in Chicago also.
Cannot confirm.
He basically the name of the place where he left the gloves is in Walt's office instead of Brian.
Okay.
Nope. Doesn't make a difference why they changed that. Okay. And then he basically just says, forget it. If you can bring them back with you. And then he goes, I don't need gloves. I get in the elevator, go to the limousine, go to the airport, and
go
I'm
to
home.
The limousine.
Okay. His original plan is to take a limousine.
Can you hail a limousine?
Well, we'll talk about that in just a short while. And then he basically says, have a good holiday. And then Neil's response is, that's a contradiction in terms. Meaning he's not looking forward to this holiday either.
I can relate.
Apparently,
yeah.
He's on his way home. You know, he's not looking forward to seeing Susan and being with her there. Okay. Now, when Neil gets down to the ground floor of this building, the elevator doors open, and there's this huge crowd that's all moving past. And then you can see that he's completely disappointed because now for sure he's going to have problems trying to get to the airport in time. And then we see that through the revolving doors, there's a steamer trunk that's jammed in the revolving doors. And there's an unseen person who's struggling with it. And we don't see the person's face. So basically everyone's trying to get out of this building, but there is this steamer trunk someone is trying to get through to, and it's stuck in the revolving
door. That seems entirely unrelated to the rest of the film. I don't see why that would be in the script.
No, completely. No steamer trunk ever mentioned in this movie. And then he finally gets out of a regular door. He's able to it says he squeezes out of a conventional door and hurries across the plaza to a waiting limousine. The driver gets out and opens the hood. A plume of steam rises from the overheated engine. So he was supposed to take a limousine. You know, his company apparently was going to pay for him to take a limousine. So that's why I said earlier that they must have ADR'd the whole idea of him actually, you know, taking a taxi. Or John saying, you know, take a taxi.
Yeah, that would make less sense as to why John wasn't joining him. If there was this
that
vehicle.
Sure. Well, maybe they had two limousines.
God. Ah, yep. 80 success.
Yes. And that's pretty much it. That's the way that this ends. Now, the truth is, I'm glad they cut that out. Because I think it would have been too much to have Dell already causing problems when he's trying to get out of the building.
Yeah, and given that we do see the steamer trunk later this week, that would have had to have traveled to get out of the door and move it to its new location during... Yeah.
Just wait. We'll talk about it over the next 2 days.
And I'm glad they cut out the limo as well, because that feels more like... I like that Dell seems like he's a cause of a lot of problems, but maybe it isn't as much throughout the course of the journey. But having the limo break, there's no way to blame that on Dell. That's just bad luck.
Completely.
unless between being stuck in the door, he then gets the limo and there's the steamer trunk smashed in the hood of the car.
You never know. All right, well, as I mentioned, every day on this podcast, we have this segment called Off the Beaten Track, where either Myself or my guests will tell a short or perhaps long story about some kind of travel adventure or misadventure that either of us have experienced. So, Jay, you have another one for
I do. I
us?
have one that involves public transport because he's trying to catch a cab.
Ooh, there you go.
When my wife and I, when we started dating, she wasn't my wife yet. It was leading up to her 21st birthday. I thought I'd take her on a nice trip for her 21st. She always wanted to go to Dublin, so I took her to Dublin for her 21st. This is when we were both quite young, didn't have a lot of money. It wasn't the greatest holiday in the world because we didn't really do a lot there. Neither of us drink Guinness, so we didn't do any of that. But we were staying at a hotel just outside Dublin. We took the bus back one quite late in the evening. And we hadn't been there at night. We'd been there during the day. So we get off the bus where the bus driver says this is where the hotel is, and we look around, and we cannot see the hotel. And the bus drives away.
Ooh.
And we're looking around like, where is? So we head off down a road. We didn't really have the address. We didn't really have Google Maps or anything. We just kind of headed off in a direction, and walked around this kind of dodgy looking estate. Like housing estate, we were. I'm trying not to sound too upper class here, but it just we were a little. There were some like hooded youths dotted around the place who, like marauding gangs of Irishmen. So we were kind of wandering around for a while trying to find. And we were going for about half an hour, 45 minutes, an hour. Couldn't find where we were going. Just wandering around these strange roads. Eventually, we see the hotel. And like, oh my God, it's there! And it's. The other side of the road from where the bus dropped us off. So we just didn't turn around. So we were all fine.
A great story. That's a great story. That's a great story.
We survived, but yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, now we're gonna return to another one of our special little segments. So we're gonna today it's Wednesday, so we're gonna talk about Hump Day Hughes. So Jay is now gonna give us his top five John Hughes movies, directed movies.
Very, very easy list to do because he has eight. I've seen seven, and I'm not a huge fan of two of them. So I have so my five was easy to narrow down. It was just putting them in the correct order. So my number five is Weird Science. I liked that a lot as a kid, and still appreciate it. I still appreciate the Bill Paxton of it all, having grown up. He's wonderful.
Yeah.
Number four would be Uncle Buck. John Candy is a delight in everything he's been in. Ferris Bueller's Day Off is my number three. Just an endlessly fun film. Number two is this film here, Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. Wonderful film. But number one for me, it has to be The Breakfast Club. That's a film that meant a lot to me growing up. I have a lot of emotional connections to that film. The character of Brian is one that I relate to a great deal. Have a similar childhood to he has had, so that's Breakfast Club is my number one. For I know it has its detractors.
So someone put pot in your pants.
No, that didn't happen. I mean,
Okay.
I won't go into it, but for not a million miles away. But that's for another podcast. But no, it's,
Apparently.
but yeah, number
All
one
right.
is the Breakfast
Well,
Club for me.
okay. Well, thank you for your top five on that. So, Jay, why don't you tell people how they can get in touch with you?
You can find me on Twitter at LifeVSFilm or on Instagram at JayCluitt. And also, I am the Shepherd of the Lamb, the large association of movie blogs, which is how Rob and I met. You can find it at large-movieblogs.com. It is exactly what it sounds like. It is a huge collection of online movie blogs. We have over 2,000 blogs, podcasts, YouTube channels as members now. People from all over the world, not just in the UK and Israel, but America and India and Australia and pretty much I think every country we have members in, or many many countries have members in,
Yeah, I don't
and
think
if,
everyone, but a
not
lot
every
of
country because there's a lot of countries. There's more than, I don't think we've got anyone in Antarctica
I was
at the
going
moment,
to say
but if there's
Micronesia.
anyone in Antarctica listening who wants to be a member, then please get in touch. So yeah, anyone who's listening who has a movie blog or a podcast and wants to be a member of a huge community, find some friends, find some podcast guests or some just like-minded people you want to have a movie conversation with, then head to the Lamb, largeassmovieblogs.com. We'd love to have you.
Excellent. All right. And while you're doing that, you can go rate, review, and subscribe on any podcatcher you might be using to listen to this show. As I always say, the best way to get in touch with me is via Movie Rob Minute. I have a Facebook group, my website, Twitter, and that's the best way to get in touch with me. So, Jay, you want to come back again tomorrow?
I'd love to. I want to find out who's
All
whistling.
right, no problem. Well, that'll be it for Wednesday. You're fired.
You're fired.